Good evening. You're listening to Left Out on WRCT. Left Out discusses news and perspectives, news from the perspective left out of the mainstream media. It's co-hosted by Bob Harper and Danny Slater, myself. Bob is not here today. Today's program is produced by Matt Horniak. Listeners are invited to call the program at 412-268-9728 and to give your opinion or chime in on the issues we're going to discuss. Today we're going to discuss a number of issues involving voting, as we've done in the past a couple of times before. And we have a couple of guests. One is over the phone, and one will be here in the studio later on. So begin with Jan Koch, who is an engineer and political scientist. Jan is an engineer and political activist who's taken a keen interest in alternative voting systems. By that, I mean different ways for voters to express their preferences, what they want. And we'll be talking about a number of different systems and their pros and cons, and a particular idea called range voting that seems to be the best of all the alternatives. Colin is a graduate student in computer science at the University of Pittsburgh, and he's been involved in local issues involving voting here locally in Allegheny County. We'll get talk about that in more detail later in the program. Yeah, and maybe if you could just give us a real basic summary for our listeners, what do you see the important issues about the voting systems, the way that voters express their preferences?
Well, the system we have right now is called plurality. That's the method that's used all across the United States and the one we're all familiar with. It has two major problems. First one is that it can select a wrong winner. Yet, for example, the Florida 2000 election with Bush and Gore and Nader, I would say that the wrong winner was chosen by this selection system. The reason I say that is that Bush and Gore were, of course, neck and neck, but there were about 2% of the votes that were cast for Nader. And we can presume that most of those Nader voters would have preferred Gore. So if you look at the Gore and Nader voters together, more than half of the voters would have preferred Gore. So that's what I mean by the wrong winner problem with plurality voting.
So it also creates a dilemma for the voters themselves.
The people that want to vote for Nader, some of them anyway, will be aware that if they vote for Nader, then they don't have a chance to influence the real election that's between Gore and Bush. It's just a dilemma. They have to choose whether to show support for their true favorite candidate or to just vote for the lesser of two evils.
So in other words, the turnout in typical elections is pretty low for the third party candidates. Then,
yes,
and that's not you don't think that's representative of the true feelings.
Oh, definitely not. The Libertarian Party, for example, conducted a poll, and they found that about, I don't know, somewhere in the range of 10 to 20% of the population was actually quite libertarian in their thinking. It's just that they didn't know that they were libertarians, for example. And I would assume that, some of the other parties, some of the other third parties are the same way. But because of that dilemma that people face in these major elections, where voting for their favorite candidate, if it's a third party or an independent candidate, they don't get to choose the real winner. Because of that, most everyone is forced to vote for the one of the two major candidates.
Okay, so what?
So, for example, in 2004, there was less than 1% of the popular vote that was cast for all of the third-party candidates combined.
Okay. So there are a number of solutions that have been proposed for dealing with this problem. Maybe we could just talk about the most common ones. I mean, the website rangevoting.org, which you've been involved creating, discusses probably a half dozen or more different alternative voting systems. But for our program today, why don't we just start with the couple of the most natural ones and the ones you think are the best?
Well, if I'm asked to choose the best one, I would say range voting.
Okay.
I can go into some of the others. But in range voting, each voter is asked to give a score to each of the candidates. And that score would be in a range of, for example, 0 to 10 or 0 to 100 or 0 to 99. whatever the election department decides to request of the voters. And that's or one other option is to vote an X. If you have no opinion about a particular candidate, then you can just mark an X, and that won't count in the average. So after everyone has voted, you add up all of the scores, take the average, and whoever gets the highest average, whoever gets the best average vote wins. And it's very, very much like the Olympic system, where the judges vote 9.7, 9.6, and whoever gets the...
And then they average together all those judge scores for each of the participants, and then the one with the highest average wins.
Right.
Okay. So it's like, except in this case, the candidates are, the judges correspond to the voters.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. So I see. So, okay, well, that's pretty clear then. What would happen if, in the case for the example with Bush, Nader, and Gore, the people who, for example, favored Nader the most might give him, a 10, and they maybe give a Gore a 5 and give Bush a 0, for example. And that, or maybe Nader a 10, Gore a 10, and Bush a 0. Something
That's right.
Like that.
If it was me, I'd probably, and I preferred Nader, I would probably vote Nader 10, Gore 9, and Bush 0. Not necessarily that I really think that, Gore deserves a 9, but I would want him to win more than I would want Bush to win.
Yeah, so what's the difference between this, and is this a lot better than just having a system where you just choose a 1 or 0 for each candidate? Or 1, 0, and X?
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. One is that it does let you distinguish a finer gradation of preferences. So you can say, I prefer this guy, I give this guy a 10, I give this guy a 5 or a 3, and I give this guy a 0. So there's a lot more choices than simply 0 and 1.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, it seems like if you're gaming the system, in other words, if you want your influence to be maximized, you would tend to choose close to the extremes.
That's right.
Yeah. The range. So that would then reduce to the 0-1 version. But
yes, but it turns out that Warren Smith, the founder of Center for Range Voting, did a study of, well, he did an exit poll of people in the 2004 election, asking them to vote with range and also vote with approval voting, which is the 0-1 version of range voting. And what he found in range voting was that really a surprising number of those people that responded voted sincerely. They didn't just vote 0 or 100. They voted, some voted 50, some voted 75, some 25, just all over the scale.
Okay.
And I think it was on the order of about 50% of the people did that.
Okay. So what do you think would be the consequence, just being optimistic and saying that this was installed for, say, the presidential election? I mean, what would be the consequence? I know I talked to Warren Smith about this, and he feels there'd be lots of consequences. Maybe I should ask him this question.
Well, the ones that I see are, for example, that people would no longer have a reason not to vote for their favorite candidate. And so that has quite a ripple effect. First of all, we can expect that the alternative candidates get a much higher number of votes, effectively, than they do now. So there's an example on the website where he shows the results of his exit poll. Nader, for example, in the popular vote, got 0.38% of the popular vote. But under range voting, the respondents gave Nader about 25%. In other words, if you normalize the votes to, so what he asked was give him a score from 0 to 100 for each candidate, and you average all of that stuff out, and you get 25, an average score of 25 for Nader. So that's really huge compared to Bush and Kerry. Kerry got 55%, Bush got 40%. Got an average score of 40. Kerry got an average score of 55. Nader got an average score of 25. So that, and it's hard to even compare. Nader is in the same ballpark, basically, as Bush and Kerry.
Right.
And similarly, some of the other alternative candidates got much better scores as well. The Libertarian candidate, Badnarik, got an average score of 9 versus the popular vote of 0.32%. Green candidate Cobb got an average score of 5 compared to a really tiny popular vote of 0.1% and so on. So installing this system would allow people to express their preferences for the alternative candidates rather than being forced to just vote for the lesser of two evils and not being able to give any support to these alternative candidates. And the result of that, of course, is that the viewpoints Well, first of all, the media would pay more attention to these alternative candidates. Right now, they get no respect, right?
Right. They get totally ignored. I was just going to say that one of the factors that I've always, we've talked about here, I left out a lot of the way the mainstream media treats everything, including the electoral candidates. And, of course, the mainstream candidates are still going to get the majority of the coverage, the news coverage, and everything else. But it does make sense, does stand to reason, that if people are getting such high percentages, that would give more weight to their opinions somehow, don't you think? I guess I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I think so. I think the press and everyone else looks at the numbers that we actually get, where, for example, in 2004, all of the alternative candidates together get less than 1% of the popular vote. They look at that and they say, well, you know, these guys are...
They're totally irrelevant.
Yeah,
they're not worthy of even listening to them. No reason to listen to them. They're just totally out of the mainstream. Right. It makes them seem out of the mainstream, quote unquote.
Right.
Yeah. Fringe.
Yeah.
Colin had a question.
Yeah. So I wanted to know, Jen, what changes in the law would be necessary to make range voting possible? I.e., at the federal level, would it require a constitutional amendment? I don't believe so. I'm just scanning the Constitution now. But what changes in the law do you think it would take to make this actually be used, and how do you see those occurring?
I don't think it requires a change to the federal laws. Possibly in some details, but the states decide how they want to conduct elections. So it's really a state-by-state kind of activity to get each state to use range voting or some other system.
Yeah, right now the states, for example, are allowed to sort of bypass the electoral college by allocating electors in proportion to the number of the vote to each candidate. And that would essentially almost eliminate the electoral college as a factor. Mm-hmm. And eliminate the swing state phenomenon. Yeah. Where all the effort is put into a handful of swing states. And
that's not the system right now, but a few states are signing on to this bill that you mentioned. And then when there are enough of them, then, yes, they'll be able to do what you said.
In a sense, it just kind of it discretizes it in the sense that the states apportion the electoral college voters in terms of they apportion them in terms of the vote, but it still reduces the number. So you've got just a different level of granularity at that point.
Yeah. But, I mean, it would change the phenomenon that happens in a federal election, of course, is there's a few swing states.
Yeah.
And that all of the effort by the candidates goes into those states because there's no reason to spend money on a state like California, which was going to go to Kerry or Gore.
Yeah.
And so the candidates don't spend any time there or any money. And so it skews it in a weird way. Too much effort being spent and too much consideration of issues that are local to certain areas.
Well, take Alaska and Hawaii, for example. Most of the time, the winner has already accepted and the loser already declared defeat before they've even closed their polls. Because both sides just assume, I mean, they're two electoral votes each. They go to the majority, and neither side considers it important because, as you say, California, New York, you know, they want to grab those and...
Right. Yeah, the problem with the Electoral College right now, what you're alluding to, I don't know if we said it explicitly, but the problem is that the states, it's all or nothing. It's all of the votes. For almost all of the states, all of the electoral votes go to one winner, or all of them go to the other winner, the other side. It's not allocated proportionally. So, for example, Colorado, where I'm at right now, I think we have 9 electoral votes. All 9 go to Bush, or all 9 go to Kerry. If we enacted this law that you've been mentioning, then we might have 5 electoral votes going to Kerry and 4 going to Bush.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to someone else.
Yeah. So that's a different issue than the main one that you've been promoting here on the range voting. It would be, I think, an improvement in the whole campaign structure, of course, as well. But another issue that I noticed that you mentioned to me before is the issue of the voting machines themselves, which we're going to talk more about later on. This notion that some of the voting systems, like instant runoff voting, which we haven't talked about today so far, some of those systems are compatible with the voting machines that we have.
Yes. Range voting is actually compatible with any existing voting machine. The instant runoff voting does not work with certain, and it's alleged to work with certain voting machines. People have done some IRV elections with certain voting machines, but there are a number of different types of machines out there, and it's by no means obvious that IRV will work on all of them. There IRV is actually quite difficult technically to implement with voting machines. And it generally takes some upgrades of software and so on.
Just to mention to our listeners, IRV means instant runoff voting. It's a system where you list the preferences of your order. You make an ordered list of your preferences, and that's used to compute the winner. We have on the line Warren Smith, I believe. Warren, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Warren.
Hi.
So Warren was one of the promoters in the range voting system. And I guess have you been listening to the discussion so far?
Nope. I just got back.
Oh, okay. Let's see. I mean, we've gone over some of the issues. I don't know which part to start with here.
Well, I just heard a little about the Electoral College. Perhaps I should say something which you may not know.
But
you know there are two states, Maine and Nebraska, which proportionally elect their electors, whereas every place else it's all or nothing.
Right.
However, that's a bit of a myth. This is the part you may not know. If the proportion is, say, 50% in Nebraska, that does not mean 50% of the electors are going to be on that side, because it's done by district. So, for example, if Nebraska is gerrymandered so that all the Democrats are packed in 100% Democrat districts, Republican districts are 51% Republican. That's the way that the gerrymanderers try to do it. In that case, the electors from Nebraska will be highly skewed and non-proportional. So you see, actually, in some ways, it can even make it worse to have this pseudo-proportional system.
Ah, so in other words, what can happen is you get more electors for a side that had fewer votes. That could even happen.
Yeah. If one party gets to gerrymander that state, that side's going to win. Whereas,
yeah,
with the all-or-nothing system, if 51% of the votes go one way, then 100% of the electors go that same way, but at least it's the right way.
Yeah.
So you see, in some ways, it can actually make it worse. So what we want is proportional electors, but done without gerrymandering, as proportions of the popular vote in that state is what we want. But there's no state that does that.
So a question that Colin asked earlier that was whether what legal issues have to be resolved to allow range voting to be done? And Yan answered it by saying he thought it was just a state-by-state issue. Is that correct, as far as you know?
I believe it could be done state-by-state or city-by-city or the whole country. As far as I can see, there's nothing in the Constitution that says you have to use one voting system or another. Constitution does not specify which voting system we need to use.
Yeah, I was actually looking at a copy here, and Section 4, Clause 1 says, the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof.
But the Constitution doesn't say it has to be plurality voting.
Right, so it wouldn't, I mean, barring another amendment I haven't read, essentially it wouldn't require a constitutional amendment. In theory, each state could just decide to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And not only that, some states have decided to use different voting systems. Illinois used to use something called cumulative vote for something like 100 years. They used. And some states used to use the Buckland system to elect governors, which is another voting system, although I don't think any use it anymore. And it's even easier with primaries, because in party primaries, in a lot of states, it's just the party. Like the Democratic Party can make its own rules without any laws needing to change at all.
So one of the things you've been striving for is to try to get the range voting used for the Iowa caucuses, right? An alternative way of choosing the candidate in the primary.
Absolutely. So we believe that Iowa is an excellent place to try to improve the voting system because everybody wants it. In many places, say, some party or some politician does not want to change the voting system because they got elected with the plurality system. They don't want to change what elected them.
They don't want to change anything about it, like the day of the election or any registration procedures, any aspect of it.
Yeah, but in the Iowa primary caucuses, that dynamic doesn't hold. I mean, there's nobody who was previously elected. I mean, in the Iowa caucuses, there's going to be like 10 Democrats running and 10 Republicans running, and the rules are set just by the Democratic and Republican parties, not even a state law. So the Democratic and Republican parties say, hey, we're going to use range voting in Iowa. And they win if they do that, because the Democrats will be better off by getting a better presidential candidate as their presidential candidate. The country will be better off. The Iowans will be better off because they'll get more individual choice on their votes, get to express their opinions more, and so forth. And the Iowan politicians will will get a lot of free publicity out of it. I mean, nobody's ever heard of some politician in Iowa, and then some politician in Iowa says, well, I'm the one that brought us range voting, and he gets national attention for free. So it seems to me everybody, just about everybody, will want it, and that by itself will have a huge effect, because basically the Iowan primary is basically about 50% decide who's going to be our president. Without, forget the rest of the country, just that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. What other issues should we talk about with the different voting systems and range voting? Do you have any other points you want to make? What would be? I know you've been very active pushing this. You have a book actually that you're trying to get published about this, and we should remind our listeners again about the website rangevoting.org website, which has lots and lots of information about the system. I mean, in addition to the fact that probably Gore or would have won in 2000. What other advantages do you see accruing from this type of the implementation of this?
Oh my God! We're living in such an undemocratic country. There would be changes would eventually be immense. Although immediately there might not be so much change. All right, for a start, have we discussed the fact that we're incredibly two party dominated and one party dominated in this country?
No.
Oh well.
Yeah.
Did we? I guess we did. I don't know.
The third-party advantage is what you're saying, then.
Well, right now, there's zero members of the House, Senate, or Executive who are members of a third party. Out of, like, 600 in all, zero. All right, and that's typical. All right, so there's total domination by the top two parties, whereas lots of other countries, there's more than two parties.
Yeah, but I think that isn't that a different phenomenon? We talked about this before, that not on the phone, I mean, personally, about the fact that in Germany, for example, they have this at-large members of the body, which are selected based on the total vote for the third parties. That wouldn't happen in range voting.
Other countries have different voting systems, and as a result, they have more than two parties.
Right.
But our voting system leads by a phenomenon called Duverger's Law to two-party domination. And that's bad because there's a lot of views that are just completely shut out of government and therefore shut out of the media, and they're unimportant issues, like the Green Party, say, or the Libertarian Party, or the Socialist Party. I think these people all have important things to say and important ideas that are just shut out.
Right.
Let me jump in here.
We not only have two-party domination, we have one-party domination.
Let me jump in here. The two major parties in 2004, both candidates were for continuing the Iraq War. Both candidates were for continuing the drug war, and both major candidates were in favor of continuing the Patriot Act. All of the minor parties that I know of were against all of those three issues. So that's what we're missing out on.
Yeah, another example was WTO and NAFTA. Both major party candidates were in favor, and all the minor party candidates were against.
Yeah.
So these views are shut out, and if you're a voter who was against WTO or something, you have nowhere to go. So that's undemocratic. And if you're an anti-war voter, and so the Vietnam War, the same situation happened. I guess it was Humphrey versus Nixon, and both were pro-war.
Well, there was McGovern afterwards, McGovern versus Nixon.
Nixon, 72.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that was the next election.
Yeah, Humphrey was after they got LBJ.
LBJ stepped in and decided to not run.
The irony there is Nixon got elected and promising to end the war and then reversed it as soon as he was in because he refused to look like he lost.
He said he had a secret plan to end the war.
But he ran on a claim that he would end the war and then promptly, invaded Cambodia.
Anyway, those are very persuasive arguments. I think it's a great thing to work on, a great issue. Let's see. I'm not sure whether we should. We did have some other stuff we wanted to talk about with Colin here about the local election issues. So maybe Warren or Yan, if you want to wrap it up, so we can move on. We don't have enough time to cover everything, but
let me just say not only is it just the minor parties that are pushing those things. It was approximately 50% of the population was in favor of each of those issues that I listed. So doesn't it seem just a little bit strange that those issues, none of the candidates that were realistic that anyone could really vote for were advocating getting out of Iraq. No one was advocating getting out of the drug war. No one was advocating ending the Patriot Act. None of the major candidates were. Now, all of the minor candidates were, but you know, they have no chance. And the other thing I think is really, really brilliant, I think, you know, Warren came up with this, but the idea of getting the parties, including the major parties, to use range voting for their primaries and their candidate selection. Warren talks about Iowa, but I believe that that can be used anywhere. It can be advocated anywhere. I'm a libertarian. I've asked the Colorado Libertarian Party to use range voting for their candidate selection. I've also got a proposal into the National Libertarian Party to use range voting in the national convention, and I would urge anyone of any political stripe to talk to their parties, the parties that they're involved with, and urge them to use range voting in their own parties for candidate selection.
Okay, well, I guess we'll wrap up this section of the program and start talking about a different topic right now, but I would like at least one of you to get off the line so we can take a call.
We've been talking to Jan Koch and Warren Smith about voting systems and range voting in particular. If you want to give us a call, you can call us at 412-621-9728. We have a caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
So you have a question or comment?
Well, I'm interrupting you, like going backward. Say, taking Pennsylvania as an example, the Republican voters here are disenfranchised in a sense because our state legislature awards the entire state to the winner in the presidential election, right? And why not go to the proportional where, by congressional district, we have equal number of votes. We have a number of votes in the Electoral College for the two senators plus each congressional electoral district. Why not say, well,
yeah,
whoever wins 51% of the vote gets the two senatorial votes. Then we'll go by congressional district itself in terms of saying.
Okay.
And that means then states like California don't get written off by the Republicans, and nor does New York, and vice versa. And then you don't have just all this fighting in Ohio and Pennsylvania and other battleground states.
Yeah, okay.
They can't ignore states. Thank you.
Okay, I can comment a little. Maybe Ann can comment, whatever. But we already talked about a little bit about this. That what I think is that one reason why, say, Pennsylvania doesn't do it is because by having it's an all-or-none system, Pennsylvania gets more interest.
Yeah.
Because it's a battleground state, and because of the all-or-nothing way they've set it up, it gets more. But on the other hand, if we reverse that, a state like California, if they did go to the proportional system, then they would get more,
okay,
potentially more, or would they? I don't know.
No.
They'd only be battling for one or two electoral votes, so why would you bother?
Whereas
Pennsylvania's 35 or something.
It's kind of a game theory thing. It's like if everybody moves there, then it's better to move there. But on the other hand, look what's happening in Pennsylvania now. It's an all-or-nothing state, and in the last election, it went to Kerry. And now, under the current president, Pennsylvania's not getting a lot of federal money. So it's kind of a... One of the disadvantages of being all or nothing is if you're all or nothing on the wrong side, there can be punishment coming your way, in a sense. And so it can be problematic.
Yeah, and the other issue is what Warren mentioned about the fact that gerrymandering can actually make it worse.
Yeah.